listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the continuation of War of the Rosé by Mark Seal. On Tuesday, September 13th, 2016, the family gathered for what someone on the estate would call the Last Supper. That week, Pitt and Jolie had each flown in from far-flung locales, Pitt from the coast of Croatia, where he was developing a multi-billion dollar, ecologically responsible luxury resort, Jolie from a three-day visit to a camp in Jordan, housing 60,000 Syrian refugees. Now they were both back with their kids in the place they loved most. The family came together on the lawn, overlooking the new soccer field, beneath the gaze of stone cupids and ancient olive trees. They ate dinner at a long outdoor table. The next day, they flew off into ruin. Jolie and the children rode in their 12-passenger luxury bus to the private jet terminal in Nice, where Pitt, who had been in meetings that day on Miraval business, was waiting. After swiftly being cleared by police and customs officers, they boarded a chartered silver Bombardier Global Express. It departed at 7:42 p.m., headed for Burbank, California. Roughly 8 hours after takeoff, the plane touched down in International Falls, Minnesota. The single runway Iserson Field Falls International Airport, a 10-minute drive from the Canadian border, is a favorite spot for private jets from Europe and Asia to quickly refuel and clear customs and immigration before continuing on to their final destinations. It was in this remote location at 9:12 p.m. on September 14th that the Brangelina comet fell to Earth. Tensions between Pitt and Jolie had been boiling for about a year. They tried to keep their arguments between themselves and had made a point to never argue in front of the children until the plane. Even though associates say they've never seen Pitt intoxicated, and I've been there for 15 years, says Bradbury, on the plane he was drinking quite a bit. It would be years before details of what happened on the plane came to light. For now, only a few key facts were available. The plane landed in International Falls. Pitt had been drinking. Husband and wife had a fight in which he became aggressive. The interior of the plane was damaged. Wine and beer were spilled. The wife and children were frightened. The family was instantly torn apart. And the authorities were alerted, by whom nobody seemed to know. News of the altercation quickly went viral. Brad Pitt, under investigation for child abuse, TMZ reported on September 22nd, added people, Pitt is accused of getting verbally abusive with one of the couple's kids, as well as getting physical, said a source with knowledge of the situation. An anonymous caller, identifying herself only as a woman dating a guy who worked on the tarmac, told a Minneapolis radio station her boyfriend could hear the screaming even before the doors opened. Pitt knew he had effed up. Just how badly soon became clear. His wife and kids checked into a hotel, and now he went home alone to the 6,700-square-foot home he'd shared with his family in L.A.'s Los Feliz neighborhood. The Los Angeles Department of Children and Family Services, DCFS, had opened an investigation about his behavior during the flight. Because the incident occurred on an airplane, the FBI launched a similar investigation. Then, on September 19, 2016, 5 days after the plane incident, Jolie filed for divorce. She cited irreconcilable differences and asked for full custody of their six children, with Pitt granted visitation rights. Although an FBI agent provided the U.S. Attorney's Office with copies of a probable cause statement related to this incident, according to a redacted FBI report, Pitt was never charged, and the investigation was closed. After reviewing the document, a representative of the United States Attorney's Office discussed the merits of this investigation with the case agent. The FBI report read, "It was agreed by all parties that criminal charges in this case would not be pursued due to several factors." The matter seemed to be done. No further details of what happened on the plane emerged. Until, 6 years later, someone identifying herself only as Jane Doe filed several Freedom of Information Act requests to access the FBI's incident report. Several years ago, while plaintiff, her then husband, and their children, who were all minors at the time, were traveling via private aircraft, the husband allegedly physically and verbally assaulted plaintiff and the children, who have experienced lasting physical and mental trauma as a result of the assault. A judge's summary of the FOIA request reads, "A judge rejected Jane Doe's request to keep the entire FOIA lawsuit sealed." News outlets then began speculating that Jane Doe was in fact Jolie. An attorney for Jane Doe, while refusing to reveal her client's identity to preserve the family's privacy, told a reporter for Politico, "Our position is that victims and survivors should be able to access federal agency records of crimes they experienced or reported, as is common at the state level, so they can advocate for help and trauma care and legal protection for their children and themselves." In August 2022, a redacted version of the 53-page FBI report surfaced in the media. A wave of headlines followed as news outlets sifted through the explosive allegations. By then, the legal war over Miraval was underway. On February 17, 2022, Pitt sued Jolie and Nouvelle, the company that held her shares of the Chateau Miraval estate, and amended the complaint 4 months later. In October, Jolie filed a cross-complaint against Pitt and his holding company, Mondo Bongo, named after the song he and Jolie so seductively danced to in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Jolie said she had never before publicly revealed her reasons for divorcing Pitt and selling her share of Miraval. But when Pitt filed this lawsuit seeking to reassert control over Jolie's financial life and compel her to rejoin her ex-husband as a frozen-out business partner, Pitt forced Jolie to publicly defend herself on these issues for the first time, the cross-complaint said. In it, she laid out her side of the story, including what happened on that plane on September 14, 2016, in graphic terms. The scene that follows is difficult to fathom. Jolie would reportedly tell the FBI it didn't feel real. Her complaint and the redacted FBI report suggest that the fuse was lit before they arrived at the airport, when Pitt had a confrontation with one of the children, believed to be Maddox. After takeoff, Pitt allegedly accused Jolie of being too deferential to the children. A source close to Pitt says he felt Jolie was trying to drive a wedge between him and his kids. On the plane, Jolie had a glass of wine. Pitt didn't appear incapacitated, Jolie would tell the FBI, adding that he could drink a bottle of vodka without losing functionality. 90 minutes into the flight, her cross-complaint says, Pitt told Jolie to come here and directed her to the back of the plane, away from the children. Then he pulled her into the bathroom and began yelling at her. He allegedly grabbed Jolie by the head and shook her, and then grabbed her shoulders and shook her again, pushing her into the bathroom wall. Pitt also punched the ceiling 4 times. The commotion caught the attention of one or more of the children. "Are you okay, Mommy?" they ask. "No," Pitt allegedly responded. "Mommy's not okay. She's ruining this family. She's crazy." When one of the kids confronted him, he lunged at the child, according to the complaint. Jolie grabbed him from behind to hold Pitt back, but he threw himself into the airplane's seats to get her off him, the complaint says. As a result, she suffered injuries to her back and elbow. The children rushed in and all bravely tried to protect each other. Before it was over, Pitt choked one of the children and struck another in the face. Some of the children pleaded with Pitt to stop. They were all frightened. Many were crying, according to Jolie's complaint. Over the remainder of the flight, Pitt continued to rant, and at one point poured beer on Jolie and the children as they tried to sleep under blankets, Jolie claimed, adding that he caused $25,000 worth of alcohol damage to the interior of the plane. Next photos, air pressure. Pitt, Jolie, and their 6 children arriving at LAX in 2014, 2 years before the altercation, on a private plane that is also pictured here. When the plane landed in International Falls, Jolie told Pitt she and the children were going to a hotel to rest and they could resume their flight to California the next day. But Pitt wouldn't have it, according to her complaint. "Nobody was getting off the plane," he allegedly said, although he did reportedly disembark to smoke a cigarette before the plane continued on to Burbank. He eventually fell asleep, giving Jolie time to devise a plan. She spoke to her children first, asking them not to intervene, no matter what Pitt did. She then woke her husband up. As the plane landed in Burbank, Jolie told Pitt that she was taking the kids to a hotel, but Pitt allegedly refused to let the family leave the plane for 20 minutes. "You're not taking my effing kids," he yelled, according to the FBI report, and he shook Jolie by the head and shoulders. "Don't hurt her," one of the children begged. He let her go, but not without calling Jolie a bitch, her complaint claims. And the authorities were alerted. Representatives of DCFS were reportedly waiting on the tarmac when the plane arrived. Who contacted them, no one can confirm. According to a source close to Pitt, Brad was drinking and the confrontation got out of hand. He was absolutely wrong in how he behaved, but immediately apologized and acknowledged that he had crossed a line, which he will always regret, and right away took steps to address this and try to make amends. Alone in Los Angeles, Pitt vowed to stop drinking. His playground had become a battleground, and his passion for wine had become his poison. He slept on a friend's floor. He looked in the mirror and didn't like what he saw. He found a lifeline in fellow leading man Bradley Cooper, who had spoken out about his recovery from drug and alcohol abuse and was known for helping others. "I got sober because of this guy, and every day has been happier ever since," Pitt would declare, while accepting an award in 2020. He attended a private and selective Alcoholics Anonymous men's group whose members he could trust not to reveal details of his addiction and soon after his divorce. It began with a fight over custody rights. Jolie wanted sole physical custody of the children. Pitt wanted joint custody. Less than a week after the plane incident, TMZ quoted Pitt as saying that Jolie had unleashed hell by allegedly spinning stories about his anger issues fueled by weed and alcohol that attracted unwelcome attention from the paparazzi. On September 30, 2016, the couple reached a temporary agreement. Jolie would have full custody. Pitt could visit, but only on several conditions. He had to agree to counseling and testing for alcohol and drugs, and the first meeting would be monitored by a therapist. That December, Pitt's lawyers filed a motion to keep the documents in the escalating custody case sealed. Jolie appears to be determined to put in the public eye any allegations she can without regard to the impact on the minor children, his lawyers wrote. In January, Jolie agreed to keep court documents sealed, but protested that the move was intended to prevent her from speaking publicly about his behavior. Pitt was terrified that the public will learn the truth, she was quoted as saying in court documents. 18 months passed. In June 2018, a judge in the divorce set a schedule for Pitt to spend more time with his children, advising, according to court papers, the children not having a relationship with their father is harmful to them. Still, the legal tug of war continued. That August, Jolie's attorney, the prominent divorce lawyer, Laura Wasser, left the case. The situation had gotten too venomous, TMZ reported. Just days after Wasser's departure became public, Jolie accused Pitt of not paying meaningful child support. According to a source close to Pitt, he paid $3 million in initial bills and pays millions more per year in child support, and also loaned Jolie $8 million of the $25.4 million she spent on director Cecil B. DeMille's former home. On April 12, 2019, the couple were ruled legally single, but they continued to wrangle over custody. After many delays, they finally agreed to a private trial overseen by John Oderkirk, the retired judge who had married them at Miraval. The proceedings lasted months and featured an F-ton of witnesses, experts, therapists, and other people who have been with the kids and around them, a source told the New York Post. Jolie offered to have three of the children, each over the required age of 14, testify about their father's behavior. The offer was declined. In May 2021, Oderkirk made a tentative decision to award Pitt joint custody of their five minor children. The eldest, Maddox, was now 19. According to Pitt's lawsuit, Oderkirk also issued a detailed report finding Jolie not credible, though a source familiar with the matter says he never used those words. Jolie was livid, a source would tell the Daily Mail. She said Oderkirk failed to adequately consider evidence of domestic abuse or fully disclose recent professional relationships with members of Pitt's legal team. A panel of three judges later removed Oderkirk from the case and vacated his rulings. As the war over the kids dragged on, an equally nasty custody battle erupted over Miraval. Dear Brad, Jolie emailed Pitt on January 21st, 2021, I have reached a painful decision with a heavy heart. She began with the good, how excited she'd been to buy Miraval, her fond memories of the place. Then she zeroed in on the bad, how it marked the beginning of the end of their family and a business that has centered around alcohol. I have tried to stay open to the business, to see it as something that could be positive for our family, and have therefore not walked away, she wrote. I see now how you have really wanted me out and will most likely be pleased to receive this email. Jolie had enlisted Christophe Celine, former CEO of the venerable Bordeaux wine brand Domaine Baron de Rothschild Lafitte, as her advisor and representative, but her frustrations mounted all the same. Over time, Pitt completely froze her out, her attorneys would claim in court papers, adding that he categorically refused Jolie's request to distribute any portion of the winery's profits to her, even though she said she had invested some $60 million of her own money into it over the years. Her investment was actually $38 million, says a source close to Pitt. All dividends were reinvested back into recovering cost and further improving the property and the business. Since their separation, she wrote in the email to Pitt, she had seen lots of inconsiderate behavior, money spent in ways that I would not have approved, and decisions made that I was not consulted on. She was especially shaken by the recent imagery that was released to sell the alcohol, presumably referring to a Miraval ad campaign featuring a black and white photo of Pitt asleep on a lounge chair. It reminded me of painful times. Their visions of the company were incompatible, and she wanted out. She would join him in selling the whole thing off, or she would accept a complete buyout of my share in the property and business. She asked him to decide one way or another within 2 weeks. Miraval, for me, died September 2016, she wrote, referring to the date of the plane meltdown, and everything I have seen in the years since has sadly confirmed that. Pitt opted to buy her half of Miraval, and in February 2021, they agreed that he would pay Jolie $54.5 million for her entire interest, including undistributed profits. The deal might have happened if not for a dispute over a non-disclosure agreement. Jolie's cross-complaint claims that, after she filed a sealed document offering to prove her allegations of domestic violence as part of the child custody proceeding, Pitt demanded an NDA to prohibit Jolie from discussing outside of court any of Pitt's personal conduct toward her or the family. She called it an unconscionable gag order. A source close to Pitt says the NDA was strictly about Miraval, merely a standard precaution intended to ensure the seller doesn't damage the value of the asset after being paid for it. According to Jolie's cross-complaint, Pitt walked away from the deal when she wouldn't agree to the NDA, while Pitt's lawsuit blasted Jolie for breaking off the negotiations in retaliation for Oderkirk's joint custody ruling. Jolie petitioned the court to lift a restraining order so she could sell her stake to a third party. She quickly found an eager buyer. Tenuta del Mundo, the wine division of the SPI group, which produces and distributes Stoli vodka and 379 other brands in 170 countries. On October 5, 2021, she sold her holding company, Nouvelle, to Tenuta del Mundo for $67 million. The buyer quickly issued a press release stating, "We are thrilled to have a position alongside Brad Pitt as curators of their extraordinary vintages." Tenuta del Mundo, it soon emerged, is controlled by a Russia-born billionaire by the name of Yuri Scheffler. For Jolie, the sale was a business transaction she had every right to make. In an effort to preserve her own mental health and well-being, she looked for and found what she believed would be a good business partner for Pitt, according to a source familiar with the matter. For Pitt, it was a betrayal. It is not a coincidence that she sold her interest in Miraval to an adversarial party and part of the family home to a stranger, right after a judge granted Brad a huge win, 50-50 custody, says a source close to Pitt. Even before the divorce, Yuri Scheffler's associates were already in Provence, seeking a foothold in the rosé boom. In 2016, Sasha Lachine had received a call from Dmitry Efimov, the CEO of the SPI group. "We represent Yuri Scheffler, and we hear you're looking for a partner," Lachine says Efimov told him. Lachine invited Efimov to the 10th anniversary party of Chateau Declan, where he produces Whispering Angel. Scheffler's representatives were keenly interested in a partnership. Mr. Scheffler didn't demand the majority stake immediately, but wanted to see a clear path to it, says Efimov, which Lachine wasn't willing to offer. Pitt had no knowledge of Jolie's decision to sell until it was reported in the press. He was shocked by the news, Pitt would say, but he too was familiar with Scheffler. His people had approached Pitt just after the announcement of the divorce, offering 60 million euros for Miraval, according to Pitt's lawsuit. In a side deal that Pitt described as bizarre, they also offered to throw in a 50 million euro private jet for the discounted price of 23 million euros. Pitt rebuffed the offer. A Stoli Group spokesperson says the company made inquiries about acquiring Chateau Miraval in 2016, but adds Stoli is unaware of any offer involving a private jet. On February 17, 2022, 4 months after the sale was announced, Pitt filed a lawsuit against his ex-wife and Nouvelle. Scheffler, SPI, and Tenuti del Mondo were later added to the suit. Filed in California, the suit sought to nullify the sale of Jolie's 50% of Miraval. In a separate suit, filed in Luxembourg, Pitt claimed that the transfer of 10% of Miraval to Jolie in 2013 should be null and void because she never paid the €1 price. And even if she had, it wouldn't be an admissible amount under Luxembourg law. In both suits, Pitt insisted she had no right to sell 50% of Miraval, since they had each agreed not to sell without the other's consent, and were entitled to a right of first refusal over any sale. He argued that Jolie's sale of her half of Miraval was unlawful, and he demanded damages in an amount to be proven at trial. What Jolie had sold wasn't merely a vineyard, his lawsuit said, but Pitt's passion, and a profitable one. As Miraval, under Pitt's stewardship, has grown into a multi-million dollar global business and one of the world's most highly regarded producers of rosé wine. As for Jolie, the lawsuit claimed, she had contributed nothing to Miraval's success. A source familiar with the matter disputes this, saying that Jolie made many contributions, financial and otherwise, and her role in marketing the wine was instrumental in increasing sales. In the California suit, Pitt complained of a Jolie-led conspiracy, which included selling her stake without his knowledge in order to inflict harm on Pitt. The sale, he charged, sought to force Pitt into partnership with a stranger, and worse yet, a stranger with poisonous associations and intentions. It added that she knew and intended that Scheffler and his affiliates would try to control the business Pitt had built and to undermine Pitt's investment in Miraval. But who was Scheffler, really? As with everything, the two sides have opposing views. In his lawsuit, Pitt insists Scheffler gained notoriety through cutthroat business tactics and dubious professional associations, and said the U.S. Treasury Department designated Scheffler as an oligarch in the Russian Federation. A spokesperson for Stoli Group says the Treasury list identified high-net-worth Russians and explicitly states that it does not indicate sanctionable conduct or involvement in malign activities, adding, Scheffler categorically rejects the suggestion that his business practices or professional associations are anything other than reputable. Pitt argued that the purported sale Jolie orchestrated behind Pitt's back poses an immediate threat to Miraval's business and carefully honed brand by aligning it with a brand so synonymous with Russia that pouring Stoli vodka down the drain became a symbol of solidarity with Ukraine, according to Pitt's complaint. For Jolie, as outlined in her cross-complaint, the sale was about freedom. After Jolie filed for divorce, everything changed. Pitt kept all the properties, and Jolie's assets were largely tied up in Chateau Miraval. Not only did Stoli pay substantially more, $67 million, than Pitt was willing to pay, $54.4 million, Stoli could readily increase the prestige, distribution, and profitability of Chateau Miraval financially, benefiting Pitt and ultimately their children. 1 year after Jolie sold her share of Miraval to Stoli, the new owners of Nouvelle filed a scorching cross-complaint against Pitt, Perrin, their associates, and companies, seeking damages for the illegal and malicious actions of Pitt and his allies to injure Nouvelle by devaluing its investments and depriving it of its proper role in the management of Chateau Miraval, the world-famous producer of rosé wine. Ever since his former wife, Angelina Jolie, filed for divorce from him in 2016, Brad Pitt has been waging a vindictive war against her and Nouvelle, her former investment company, the complaint began. As for Scheffler, the cross-complaint insisted that he wasn't in any way aligned with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He was a leading critic. He and Putin were in such open conflict that Putin's people once even tried to kidnap Scheffler. From exile, Scheffler has repeatedly stood up to Putin and his regime, the cross-complaint noted, adding that he had publicly condemned Putin's invasion of Ukraine and had financed meals for the Ukrainian people through the World Central Kitchen. As for his company's reputation in the wine and beverage world, the cross-complaint cited its partnerships with everyone from PepsiCo to Pernod Ricard and Diageo. Decrying the claim that Scheffler is a Putin ally as categorically false, the suit demanded damages in an amount to be proven at trial of at least $250 million. Pitt's demonization of Scheffler was an effort to further distract from and excuse his own misconduct, Nouvelle's cross-complaint said. It's not Stoli Group or Scheffler whose reputation poses commercial risk to Chateau Miraval. It is his own. A source close to Pitt says Stoli's allegations are completely without basis. A month later, on October 4, 2022, Jolie filed a cross-complaint of her own in which she addressed not only their embattled rosé empire, but the fateful airplane incident that had driven the couple apart. She began with the Miraval estate. Like all couples, they divided their responsibilities. Jolie said she had made her career as an actor-director secondary to her primary responsibility of raising the children. While Pitt continued his Hollywood career and took primary responsibility for renovating the chateau. The original idea was to transform the chateau into a family home and a place to host retreats and meetings to support the couple's humanitarian and philanthropic endeavors. Still, along with her money, Jolie used her name and image to help elevate the winery's status and prestige, in hopes that it would serve as a loving home for their children, as well as provide for their long-term financial security. Regarding Pitt's claim that neither party would sell their share without the other's consent, she said that premise is false. No such agreement ever existed. Pitt's beloved rosé operation was now under constant attack, his lawsuit claimed. Jolie's sale to Scheffler's company had wreaked havoc on its affairs and exposed its confidential information to exploitation by a hostile competitor, who had set about destabilizing Miraval's operations and seeking access to Miraval's confidential and proprietary information for the benefit of his competing enterprise. It was a multi-pronged offensive, the suit claimed, designed to seize control of Miraval. The Stoli Group never attempted a hostile takeover of Chateau Miraval, says a spokesperson for the company. The new owners of Jolie's share demanded access to documents that would allow Nouvelle to seek redress in France for Pitt and his allies' mismanagement. To Pitt, as spelled out in a memorandum, it was a blatant ploy to intimidate them into surrendering the business they built. On March 4, 2022, Miraval was under siege. Two court officers and an IT expert, armed with the French equivalent of a search warrant, drove through the gates and down the 2.5-mile road to Miraval. They had been dispatched by Nouvelle's new owners to conduct what French law translated literally calls a spontaneous interpolation. To Pitt and his partners, it was nothing short of a raid. Although the Stoli Group disputes that characterization. It was not a raid, the spokesperson says, but rather a bailiff's mission, precisely and narrowly foreseen by the judge. Lawyers for Scheffler's wine division had petitioned a commercial court in Provence to invoke Article 145 of the Code of Civil Procedure, which enables businesses to enter the premises of their adversaries and seize evidence of suspected malfeasance. The filing before the court cited mismanagement, misuse of corporate assets, and a blocking mechanism by its other 50% shareholder, Mondo Bongo, the company that held Pitt's Miraval shares, in conjunction with two associates at the winery. Given the existing links between the different protagonists, it is to be feared that they will consult each other in order to conceal evidence, the petition read. It went on to say that only a spontaneous interpolation, without the recipients of it being notified in advance, would enable the court to collect the relevant evidence. When their first request was denied, the lawyers petitioned the court again. In February 2022, the bailiff granted an order to proceed. Now the court's emissaries entered the offices of the historic wine estate. They seized Miraval's files and copies of contracts, invoices, correspondence, including emails, and turned it all over to the court, which would investigate and decide whether or not to pass the materials on to Nouvelle. Neither Pitt nor Perrin were at Miraval at the time. In March of this year, the president of the commercial court issued a ruling to retract the order for the search and ensure the restitution of the documents. Nevertheless, Miraval's records remain in the hands of the court, as yet unopened. This procedure is pending before the Court of Appeals of Aix-en-Provence, says a Stoli spokesperson. In the years since the plane incident, Jolie has shifted her focus, according to a source familiar with the matter. In addition to continuing her global humanitarian work, she began advocating for survivors of domestic violence. She spoke before members of the Senate and House and campaigned on behalf of the Violence Against Women Act, the Justice for All Act, which protects the rights of crime victims, and Caden's Law, also known as Keep Your Children Safe from Family Violence. She also partnered with Amnesty International to write a book for young people called Know Your Rights and Claim Them. Coverage of Jolie's account of the plane incident prompted an outcry on social media as fans of both parties digested the shocking details. And yet, in Hollywood, Pitt remains golden. In 2019, he reteamed with Quentin Tarantino in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, co-starring opposite Leonardo DiCaprio as a handsome, aging stuntman trying to make sense of the swinging 60s. Pitt's laid-back charm earned him critical acclaim and an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. The battle rages on. On June 1st, Pitt filed an amended complaint against his ex-wife and Nouvelle's new owners, continuing his campaign to have Jolie's sale to Scheffler's company reversed. That kicked off another round of headlines, with Jolie's attorney telling CNN that Pitt has never publicly denied the accusations of assault on the plane. Brad has owned everything he's responsible for from day one, but he's not going to own anything he didn't do, says Pitt's attorney, Ann Kiley. This case has been covered as a celebrity divorce. It is really a story about abuse, says a source familiar with the matter. For some, it's simply a human tragedy. I hope you'll give some grace to somebody who had a breakdown, says one person who knew the family. Everybody was shocked by the eruption on the plane because Brad is not an abusive person. But even more devastating was what came afterwards. Brad being alienated from those he loves most, his children. In May, Miraval was named the most desirable Provence rosé wine in the world, number one in a Le Figaro magazine ranking of 33 top Provençal vineyards. And while the family that created modern-day Miraval is gone, signs of the happy life they lived here remain in an all-white bedroom with furniture designed by Pitt. This is for the kids. Everything was for the kids and the family, says someone in the chateau, leading the way into the magical bedroom, located inside a building where the children were privately schooled by teachers who traveled with them from the U.S. Three of the children are now over 18, but the rest live with their mother, and Pitt shares custody and visits them. But their memory remains in this room, with its circle of white bunk beds, adorned with teddy bears and other reminders of another time. 6 bunk beds now lying empty where 6 kids once slept. None have returned to Miraval since they left in September 2016. Now, here's the Proust questionnaire with an illustration by Ryan McAmis. Colson Whitehead, the Pulitzer Prize winner and author of the new novel Crook Manifesto, on Star Wars, serial commas, and suffering fools. What is your idea of perfect happiness? I'm walking down the street, angrily muttering to myself, and then I run into a neighbor or former coworker. And they catch me in this moment of private public expression. It's nice to be seen sometimes. What is your greatest extravagance? Once a year, I supersize my 10-piece McNugget meal. You can't take it with you. What is the trait you most deplore in others? enough with the constant smiling. When and where were you happiest? Opening day of the Empire Strikes Back, 86th Street Lowe's. On what occasion do you lie to get out of social engagements and children's parties? What is your favorite journey, the miraculous journey into self-knowledge? Which living person do you most despise, the dude who came up with a 3-foot-long Dwayne Reed receipt? Which historical figure do you most identify with? Any inspiring person, did some cool shit, inflated the hopes, who has not been retroactively canceled yet. What do you consider the most overrated virtue? Gertrude Stein, obviously. Why hate on commas? Pacing, separating items in a series, providing an off-ramp for clauses, their grammar's little helper fairies. What? Oh, I misheard you. What or who is the greatest love of your life? The naps are really up there in the rankings, not gonna lie. What do you dislike most about your appearance? That dewy, just hatched sheen to my skin. What is your greatest regret? I never got to see the original cast of Kosciuszko, the award-winning musical about the construction of the Brooklyn Queens Expressway's famous bridge. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be? Best to leave things alone. Pull things out, it all comes down. I'm jingle like that. Which talent would you most like to have, to suffer fools gladly? What is your current state of mind? Connecticut. What is your most treasured possession? My sadness. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery? The jerk across the table saying, no, you really have to try it. What is your favorite occupation? Those guys and gals who choose the songs over the closing credits of prestige TV shows. Who are your favorite writers? Rod Serling and Stan Lee. What are your favorite names? Chicory for a boy, Frisee for a girl. What is it that you most dislike? Slow-walking tourist on the sidewalk in front of me, 3 abreast, cow-faced, pointing at the sights. What do you most value in your friends? They'll help me dump a body off the turnpike. And that was the Proust Questionnaire with Colson Whitehead.
Thank you.
And here's another Proust questionnaire with an illustration by Ryan McAmis, Audra McDonald. Broadway's Tony favorite holds forth on her loves, cookies, and her loathings, cruelty, and also beets. What is your idea of perfect happiness? Being at home on a Sunday night with my husband, Will, and all of our children, eating chicken tikka masala and naan from our favorite restaurant. What is your greatest fear? Balloons. I have a big phobia of balloons. Big. What is the trait you most deplore in yourself? If hoarding and procrastination were Olympic sports, I'd have at least 70 gold medals. Which historical figure do you most identify with? Judy Garland, but not for the reason you think. I identify with the insecurity she had as a performer. She once said something like, "I always worry that this is the time they'll figure out that I don't know what I'm doing up there." I feel that, deep, deep, deep in my bones. What is your greatest extravagance? As a New Yorker and a terrible cook, I order takeout much more than I should. What is your favorite journey? Journeying home to my family, which I'm doing right now. On what occasion do you lie? When they ask your weight for the teeny tiny puddle jumper planes, I have lied every time, every single time. What do you dislike most about your appearance? Not going to answer that. My New Year's resolution this year is less self-loathing, more self-loving. What is your greatest regret? That I didn't take time to go out to breakfast with my dad on what would turn out to be the last time I ever saw him alive. What or who is the greatest love of your life, Will and my daughters? When and where were you happiest? In the hospital, giving birth to my second daughter, with my first daughter right there in the room as it was happening. I don't remember any pain. I just remember feeling more alive and full of fierce mama bear love than at any other point in my life. What are your favorite names, Zoe and Sally? Which living person do you most admire? Meghan Markle. I don't know how she continues to walk through this world with the grace, strength, and purpose that she does, given the unbearable amount of vitriol and hate she has been subjected to. But she does. I wish she didn't have to. Which talent would you most like to have? To be able to speak 6 or 7 languages fluently. What is your current state of mind? Anxious. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be? Be less anxious. If you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what do you think it would be? A body of water. I'm all emotion. So a body of water feels like the right expression of that. Probably a sea or an ocean. Definitely salt water. What is your most treasured possession? Little pieces of an old teddy bear that I got when I was about 7 years old. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery, living a life filled with hate? Who are your heroes in real life? Black women. What is it that you most dislike? Cruelty and beets. I despise both. How would you like to die? In my bed at home, at a ripe old age, with the knowledge that my children and grandchildren, if I have any, are thriving, happy, and provided for. What is your most marked characteristic? Very emotional with very big hair. What is your motto? Dream big, love bigger, eat a cookie. And that was the Proust questionnaire with Audra McDonald. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.